You're listening to the Art of Play podcast. This podcast is about play, not just childhood play, all play. This podcast is exploring play as a means of not just being better adults, but better, well-rounded humans. Happy Friday, all. What a great week it has been already. I hope everyone has had a safe and happy 4th of July last week and that you've had something, you know, fun to do then. And then that you're looking forward to doing something fun this weekend. Today, I want to talk a little bit about the rebellious nature of the art of playing. So when you're a child, of course, there's lots of different phases of play. And some of it is rebellious and some of it is not. But there's an experimental phase and a part of the learning process that's just even pretending to go up against the rules, that's an essential part of play. And we end up sort of experimenting with how to bend the rules or push the rules. And there's even rebelling against sort of the universal rules that seem to sometimes dictate childhood. You know, there's sort of set boundaries as to what's appropriate for a child to do and things like that. So what I mean by that is, let's just use it as an example, like the simple rules of playing on a playground. So sometimes there are enforcers of some sort. So either an older child or a parent that is enforcing the rules. And other times it's like a self-regulation, Lord of the Flies sort of feeling. Sometimes the enforcer of the rules doesn't have enough social capital to enforce the rules, and other times they're you know, listened to and obeyed. And most of the rules of a crowded playground would say that the slide is meant for children only traveling down the slide. But that can be really hard to enforce, especially on a crowded playground, because going up the slide is exciting. It's against the grain. It feels on the edge. It feels like you're disrupting the way the status quo works. And it can even create minor bouts of conflict as you know, those children that are waiting at the top of the slide can't slide down without creating a physical collision that maybe they don't want to take on in their life. So there's frustration and things are worked through. And part of that play is seeing that kind of come to be. Now, there are some children that really bothers them when some people go against the grain, and there's others that seek out that wanting to go against the grain, you know, not just climbing up the slide, they'll climb up sides of the playground equipment or, you know, get themselves into precarious situations. There's, you know, always that extreme and that entire spectrum of play. And I realize this is a really minor example. You know, going down slides doesn't matter in the long-term view of things. And it seems really minor given, you know, the year that 2020 has been for us. But today I just want to have a quick episode. This is kind of like a free for all. Usually I have a really set outline and it gives me sort of a lot more talking points. And we're just going to kind of jump into it today. Mostly because not necessarily because I'm rebelling against the outline, but because I am just trying to make sure that I can make it come off a little bit more natural, because it is kind of, it can be a little dry. So there are a few ways that play can be rebellious, but first I want to go over why play as an adult is an act of rebellion. And then I need to give you some research to back it up and, you know, convince that brilliant brain of yours to give it a chance. And then I'd like to sort of challenge you in that third section of the podcast today. So adults playing is somewhat of a rebellion of society's expectations. And I get it. There are a myriad of ways to play, and there are, you know, the appropriate times to play, and the adult that plays on the weekend is seen as, you know, the responsible party that works all week so hard, and then they let loose on the weekends. And I'm not trying to downplay that. I'm just saying that in society's rules, the way we have evolved as human beings, the adults had to be in charge of taking care of everybody else. Now, sometimes there was a tribe leader, there was somebody who was over the group of humans. They, you know, there was, we evolved to have the adults in charge in our communities so that everybody would have the preparations that they needed for winter time or the preparations that they needed in order to, you know, have a hunting group and a childcare group and a cooking group and a gathering food group and make sure that everybody stayed alive. So I feel as though a lot of our circumstances in being adults centers around these instincts to, well, I must control a lot of this environment in order to protect or in order to provide a safe environment. And part of our systems in our body, we'll get into this later, but part of our systems also evolved in order to get us to a point where we could stay at a status quo, sort of a point of predictability. And if you played too hard as a family or played too hard as an adult or were too lazy as an adult, you know, your family starved or died or was highly unprepared. So as an adult, to play excessively feels very threatening to a lot of people, not just because, you know, we're still those cavemen, but because we have sort of laid down these societal boundaries around what the expectations of being adult looks like. And those are good. Those are well-intended. Boundaries are healthy. And being able to provide for your family is an essential part of being, of bringing a family into the world. It's also a part of becoming an adult, is to be able to prepare and provide for yourself. And so, you know, I don't want to downplay the fact that that's a good part of how we evolved, but I do want to point out that that's unnecessary now. It is unnecessary for us to expect to spend, you know, 30% of our time per day gathering food and then preparing that food to, you know, store for winter. It's unreasonable to expect that we would spend that much of our concerted effort taking care of just one aspect of our lives. And we also have evolved into making it a stressful experience to maintain lives that we feel are necessary. Some of those, you know, everybody's different. So some of that's good for you, some of that's bad. If you live in a low stress environment, a little bit of stress will stress you out. So, you know, stress is meant to be in our lives for good reason, and there's a very balancing effect. Now, okay, for the next section, let's get into how our body systems evolved to be what they are today. Your nervous system, so there's, you know, I think there's 12 main systems in the body. Your nervous system is one of those systems, and it's, you know, a complex system that is intertwined with a like sort of subsets of systems. And it is, your nervous system is hardwired for finding homeostasis. So I don't know if you remember back to seventh grade biology, not all of us do, but homeostasis is sort of the status quo modifier. And I wrote down I'm telling you, my notes are all over the place. But let's see. Okay. Homeostasis is kind of the happy place for the body systems and your emotions. Homeostasis just kind of keeps you level. It keeps you, not necessarily on alert, but ready to encounter your life that you have built. So you have built your systems around predictability of weather, predictability of being, you know, chased by a lion. And, some of those things that we encounter on a daily basis look more to us like, you know, just a stable equilibrium sort of happy place. We no longer have to worry about the loud garbage truck scaring us in the driveway as we're riding our tricycle, right? We have sort of conditioned our nervous system to be able to adapt quickly and to recognize those parts of our bodies. So within the nervous system, there's two systems that that are actually really fundamental in shaping our perceptions of the world as children. So the limbic system is sort of like the emotional processing and sort of attention and perception. It's the limbic system is a part of the brain, and it's involved in motivation or emotional regulation and memory, and there's all sorts of things, but it's sort of the on-off switch for emotional grounding. So underdeveloped limbic systems are a problem, and everybody has, like, there's not really a way to rate an entirely whole limbic system. There's just kind of like the average, you know, that we kind of say, if you fall below this line, we need to help you with some of that work, you know, therapists or things like that. And if you, you know, if you hit that line, great. If you're above that line, good for you. Like, you know, gold star for you, and just go on with your life. Stop bragging. So it's sort of like your emotional intelligence, if you will, not really emotional intelligence, but it's like the regulation, how much exposure you got to sort of experiencing your emotions, working through them, and then being able to cope with them in the future when they arose again. And we can regress in our emotional states through traumatic experiences. So our trauma as children sometimes can stagnate us in one emotional state, or trauma as an adult can make us regress to a certain state of emotional well-being as an adult. So there's kind of these points in time when the trauma of your life can affect that, and we all have different levels of trauma in life. And so that's why there's no set boundaries for how it works for everybody. So the other system that I want to talk about in the nervous system is called the vestibular system. Now, this one is a much more, it's still connected to the nervous system, but it is the regulator for like your balance or your posture or your muscle tone. Let me look at my notes real quick. Maintaining a stable visual field while moving. You know, when you watch your child's video of them walking around with your phone that happens to be on video, and the visual field is jumping around and sort of crazy, like you, sometimes it makes you dizzy to rewatch the video, and your body actually has to learn how to keep that stable in your brain, right? So you learn as an infant, and then, you know, through toddlerhood and onto adolescence and, you know, childhood, all of it combined, you learn to maintain that visual field through practice. So, you know, I don't remember toddling around as a toddler, but, you know, maybe your visual field was not as stable as when you were 8, 9, 10, 11, and you were much more likely to, you know, keep a stable field while jumping on the tramp and riding your bike off a ramp and swinging, things like that. Your coordination and muscle tone, all of that is in your vestibular system. Now, your vestibular system's whole job is to take your environment in and give your body a sense of stability. Literally, its entire job is to keep you on equal feeling footing the whole time. So if you get motion sick, your vestibular system is what controls that. And it says, oh, we've been here before. I don't like this. I'm going to make you feel nauseous so you will stop this activity. And people who have experienced, say, a fall and had a head trauma, a lot of times their vestibular systems no longer work correctly. So they have to re-exercise all of those systems within this vestibular system. So their, you know, inner ear problems and their tolerance for sitting for long periods of time or resting their head a certain way. Those all have to be re-regulated within the body. And now I realize I'm going on and on about this because I find it fascinating. So sorry if you don't, and sorry if you stayed with me this long. But when we're young, we need both slow input and fast input, right? We need to be able to turn our head quickly, but also be able to feel the ground beneath us when we are like slowly rolling on the grass. We need to be able to feel the differences because our bodies require that input. So kids love to be thrown on a bed just as much as they love their head stroked to go to sleep. So that you need both of those senses of input. As we get older, we need less of those senses of input, and we're really good at keeping sort of the slow stuff on the back burner. Like we're really good at, you know, checking our blind spot really quick while we're driving. We're really good at like reaching back, you know, back and forth with our hand to, you know, swat at a kid in the church pew or something. You know, we're really good at those quick motions that sort of get the job done and we can move on, right? Our vestibular system has established itself as stable and we are ready to move forward. Now, what's fascinating is we are less well-versed in executing the slow movements. So a lot of people will have a lot of trouble moving slowly through a yoga flow because their vestibular system has a hard time saying, I'm regulated, I'm okay, I'm feeling very stable. When you're in let's say you're balancing on one foot but focused on a point that's unrelated to you, and your body is saying, no, I don't feel stable. I'm not okay. And when you try and hold that pose and make your body focus, a lot of times as adults, we are out of practice holding that slow process. You know, so when you've had a traumatic brain injury, they want you to start slow and work up to quick so that you establish the entire spectrum of movement in your vestibular system. You're rebuilding it brick by brick. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because I think it is a great example of how our bodies literally are hardwired to find as many factors of stability as they can, and then they hold the status quo. They hold in a pattern that creates predictability for your body. That's a great system. This is not saying that's a bad system. I am extremely grateful for the fact that I can walk without a cane, that I can, you know, feel a breeze in my ear and not get dizzy. I'm extremely grateful for the regulation that my vestibular system does. What I'm saying is that we grow into these patterns that stagnate as adults. And for good reason. We need those habits and boundaries and outlines, and we need to have structure, and we need to have predictability, and we need to be able to say, I'm banking on this and on this experience to be a good thing for me. What I would like us to focus on is, as adults, we need to know that can change. We have the ability to change. And sometimes that change is going to feel very scary for those body systems, and they will override the emotional high we get from doing something good for us. So a body that has, you know, been recovering from surgery and said, okay, if I hold still, I don't hurt, that body will complain more when you go to try to make, you know, your body go to rehab. Let's say like you're rehabilitating a knee from surgery or something like that. And when you go to rehabilitate that knee, if you have held still in order to avoid the pain, you are going to be in a panic state in your body. It's going to raise your stress levels, and your body's going to feel very out of its element because it no longer knows the learning pattern for keeping you in that stable environment. Now, when we go apply that to play as adults, that's where the challenge comes in. So here we are. We've learned all about this. Sarah's blabbed on for, I don't know, almost 20 minutes now about how we like our comfort zones and, you know, the path of least resistance, and our body is really good at fine tuning that path of least resistance. So that my challenge for you is to recognize that your body systems are massively efficient. They have efficiencies beyond comprehension. And thank goodness, I don't actually want to know what 99% of energy it takes for my brain to keep my body sitting upright every day. But my challenge for you is, I want you to try and challenge the systems of your body. So usually as adults, you can't tolerate rolling down a hill, or spinning, you know, winding a swing up and spinning it. Or you can't, you know, handle diving deep down in a pool anymore. Like the pressure on your ears is too much. Or even just something small, like, you know, being able to withstand the discomfort of sprinting that last quarter mile that you used to be able to do in high school. Things that have, you know, your body has phased out for efficiency matters sometimes no longer make us comfortable. And my challenge for you is to go revisit something that used to be something you looked forward to. I was personally never the child that looked forward to spinning on a tire swing. I've never been one that really likes to be dizzy. But I am one that I loved heights as a kid. I climbed my grandpa's flagpole. I would climb to the top of his really big trees and sit there for, you know, the few hours that it took my family to visit him on a Sunday afternoon. My grandma and grandpa had great climbing trees, and I climbed our sycamore tree this last week because it is shedding its spring/summer, and it is, if you don't know about sycamore trees, their bark splits every year and they shed their bark. I did not know this about sycamore trees, but we have probably, it's most likely 100-year-old sycamore in my backyard. And this tree sheds like, you know, it's been sunburned and it's peeling time. You know, it just sheds like it's losing skin. And it's tiresome to clean up because it sheds constantly. It will literally shed all the time. So it got to the point where everything was just kind of just hanging on a thread. So I thought, well, I'll go help this tree out. And I climbed the tree. I needed the help of a ladder. I'm not one that can just like sort of parkour myself up into a tree. But I climbed the tree, and I have to tell you, it was, well, on one hand, it was a little bit frustrating because I felt so unstable, even though it's a great climbing tree. It has really wide branches. It has places to sit. There was sort of a light breeze, but not like a wind that was pushing me out of the tree. And I was a little bit frustrated that my body wasn't trusting the tree. And my muscle memory totally remembered how to climb a tree. But my brain was, you know, sending up all these alerts, like, you're going to fall. Don't put your foot there. Don't, you know, you're going to slip if you go like that. Just normal, you know, 34-year-old climbing a tree. Obviously, like, if I fall and break a hip, it's kind of a big deal. So what I want to challenge you to do is go try something that you used to do and just see how you feel, right? Like, let's say you grew up dancing. Go try a pirouette, let's say. If you grew up playing soccer and you no longer do, go try and juggle a ball. Just do something, even for, you don't have to take a full 5 minutes. Try it and just see where your body is at. And yes, I get that there are those of you that still play on soccer leagues. We've heard all of your bragging. It's fine. We're fine with it. Go do something else. Go do something you haven't done in the last little bit of your life that maybe you feel like, hey, let's just, you know, assess where I'm at. And I want you to do it with no judgment. This is a no judgment zone. You're not doing it to like perform. You're not doing it to do anything. But I want you to challenge your perception of what your capabilities are. I want you to challenge and say, if I wanted to spend the time, my muscle memory and my body would, you know, could take me back. Now, I'm not asking you to, you know, go back and break your high school speed record or any, you know, weightlifting record, none of that. We're aging all together here. But what I want you to do is challenge yourself to try something and then sit with your body for just half a minute. Just see what your body does. Do you feel panic? Do you feel relief that it's over? Do you feel frustration that, you know, your muscle memory knows what it's doing, but your body just simply won't do it anymore? Try something. Just, you know, if you used to be a singer, I want you to sing at, you know, try and sing your full range. Don't hurt yourself. This is always a goal. I am a mother, so I am that careful voice in the back of my mind that's always going, hey, don't hurt yourself. Like, don't push yourself too far. You are an adult and do that. But I do want you to like be the rebel this weekend and go out and play. Be the adult that plays this weekend and maybe plays hard, you know, go play hard. But I do challenge you to go test out and see where you were. So, you know, playing as an adult is an act of a rebellion. And to, like, the systems built into your body are built for efficiency and stability, not necessarily to push you towards the best good for your body, the best inputs for your body. And I will add in that research, I read a ton of research about how the people that actively manipulate those systems for growth over time, they're healthier. You know, they're healthier older people. They're more well-rounded people. Their experiences are richer because they're actually, you know, testing what the status quo means for their body. So yeah, a little side note. So play as a rebellion. Plenty of systems in your body that are researched and well documented as to, you know, they want stability and status quo to be maintained, but that's not always what's best. And number three, the challenge to go try something you haven't tried for your body in who knows how long. So try it and tell me what you think. This podcast is fueled by my family's mission at the Oliver Fund. We send toys to children in hardship all over the world, and we are currently working with those that may surround us in neighborhoods that might need a little bit extra support. We believe that to have the ability to work hard, there is value in playing well, and we believe that starts in childhood but doesn't end in adulthood. You can find out more online at theoliverfund.org or find us on social media at The Oliver Fund and at Art of Play Podcast. Here's to leaving you to your weekend a little more hopeful and hopefully more happily playful, if only for 5 minutes.